Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. If you are an individual who has a sensitivity to certain foods, or you're becoming more health conscious, I think you will find my guest today, Deanna Minnick, a woman that is quite well informed about food additives. And she's put out a compact, comprehensive guide, the A to Z guide to food additives. She says on this, never eat what you can't pronounce. Deanna Minnick, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a delight. Deanna, you have a background that's very supportive of this research that you have done. You are a full-time nutritionist. You educate people on a regular basis regarding that subject. And you have written a number of articles and publications regarding nutrition experience, and this spans well over 15 years. You have learned about different products, and of course, in our world today, we have, you know, tens of thousands of food products that are out there, and you have, in your own private practice, worked with people to help them maintain a level of wellness that maybe they didn't know that they could have just by being alert to additives. Now, you live in Port Orchard, Washington. How is it that this became such an interesting subject to you? Why did you decide that this was an arena that you were going to jump into with both feet, challenge, and become what I would say a consumer advocate? What was it that prompted you to do this?
Well, Donna, what I would say is the reason, what prompted me to do this is really my mother. And at the ripe old age of 9 years old, I remember my mom being very health conscious. She was teaching me as a child to read labels. And so I remember telling the kids at school about mono and diglycerides, about BHT, about dyes and colorings. And of course, you know, not many kids are too interested in that material, but it really stuck with me. And as I went through high school and college and decided to study preventative care through nutrition, what I noticed is that, wow, many people don't have a sense of what's in their food. And, you know, they're not taking the time to read the labels, or if they're taking the time to read the labels, they don't fully understand really what's in their food supply. And so as I became a little bit more seasoned in nutrition and became much more educated about these different ingredients and started educating others on them, I had a real passion to get this information out there. I think that our food supply has become much more complicated. It's not as easy as it was just, you know, even a century ago. You know, our foods are even now compilations of additives. They're not even really food products anymore. They're now defined by their additives. And so I felt that it was my obligation to really get this information out. And to give the publisher credit, Canary Press, you know, they really had the idea of putting together this pocket guide, because we need this information when we're actually at the site where we have to make a decision about a food. So that would be a grocery store primarily. Or delis, or, you know, any little store. So this is a kind of book where you put it in your back pocket, or you throw it in your purse, you put it in your backpack, you bring it out as you're shopping. And then as you continue to understand, and in the book what people will find is, I tried to make it so, you know, I'm just giving you enough information, it's not overwhelming, so that you don't have to read about the science of propylene glycol, for example. You can just know the basics of why somebody would use it, and then whether or not it's safe, and then here's a rating. And I think that's the bottom line. That's all people really need to know. So that's really where my passion came through, just seeing people over and over. And, you know, even though I have on the title, never eat what you can't pronounce, there are also some things that we can pronounce that we probably want to veer away from as well, like
sugar. Well, one of the things that I think that we need to mention is that if we go back in history, preserving food was very important, and sugar and salt were primary ingredients for the preservation of food for centuries.
Yes.
Because people didn't have freezers, you know, refrigerators, unless you lived in Alaska or someplace up in the Arctic. But typically, your food will become very, fresh food will become toxic very, very quickly.
Yes.
If there are not certain additives in it, and if there is a packaging capacity to, you know, dehydrate or keep oxygen away, because you have gazillions of microbe organisms that are naturally a part of food. They are just there. They're everywhere. And
sure.
There's no way we're going to be able to get rid of them. So when we're talking about this and we're looking at it, I think it's good to talk about history a little bit, because we're feeding billions of people today, where historically we were only feeding multi-millions, and the population is growing at such a speed. Like you say, the food has changed. It has
mm-hmm.
changed tremendously, and even with nutritional supplementation, there is a lot of synthesizing of materials to put into the body to maintain wellness. And there's so much good information that you have in the book. You make sure that you have it itemized out. And what I was really intrigued with, and we'll go into that in a minute, was the substitute sweeteners that you have. You just have a lot of good information in here. And you make a statement in your book, which I agree with. Unless you grow your own foods, what you eat is beyond your immediate control.
That's true, yeah.
And most of us are not going to be out in gardens. Most of us do not live in environments that are going to be conducive to gardening. It's just not there. So this is something in today's world where we've become very, very comfortable with this. I think of my grandmother years ago. They had to grow all of their food, or they had to buy it from a local farmer,
which in many
instances was probably healthier. But the thing is that if they didn't preserve things, they wouldn't have food during the winter. They would starve. So they spent their
mm-hmm.
whole summer, it was very labor intensive, spent their whole summer canning, preserving whatever they mm-hmm. could eat, whether it was meat or vegetables or fruit. I mean, that was something that they had to do. Food additive ease, my tongue didn't want to wrap around the additive ease word. That is really a good one to use, food additive ease.
Well, it's a whole new language, and what I was referring to there is like Portuguese or, you know, other languages. This is a whole new language, and
mm-hmm.
many people don't know how to speak this language. Even people that are in the field find it very complicated. And so I really like, Donna, that you brought up the historical perspective, because what I also would like to bring to the forefront is not a feeling of fear about additives either. There are additives that are safe, that are essential to the manufacturer and the shelf life of the food, as long as we know what those are. And I really spent a lot of time researching and going to all the different organizations, looking at the studies, because there are some things that we may think are not safe, but really those are simply perceptions, and they're not grounded in science. So
mm-hmm.
I also, you know, you alluded to that a little bit, and I'd like to come full circle with that comment, because, you know, I don't want us to become food phobic either. You know, this is part of our survival. Yeah.
All right.
So
let's
we're all on the same page.
A little bit about, you've got a couple of things that I find very interesting. In today's world, wheat products, more and more people are finding that if they eliminate wheat or gluten from their diet, they feel better. And it's a sensitivity of some kind. It perhaps has something to do with our digestive process. It can be related to any number of things. But let's talk about wheat-free products, because spelt, which I did not know this, Belt is a gluten-containing grain. And tell us a little bit about that, because there's a lot of people that say if you can't have wheat, can't have gluten, go get spelt. That'll be great. And that's not correct. Why?
Yeah, well, if we think of the acronym, and one of the easiest acronyms I give patients to go with is BROWSE, like I browse. B for barley, R for rye, O for oat, W for wheat, S for spelt. These are all gluten-containing grains. Now, oat inherently does not contain gluten, but often a lot of these grains get contaminated because they're processed along with gluten-containing grains. So spelt it contains gluten just like some of the other ones. And what I think people need to realize as well is that there are going to be varying levels of gluten in these products, in these different grains. And so it kind of depends on the cultivar. There was just a scientific publication that came out on the different cultivars and how people, I believe, with celiac disease responded differently depending on the cultivar, because you're going to have different amounts of gluten.
Mm-hmm.
And the FDA talks about less than 20 parts per million as a benchmark to claim a food as gluten-free. So, you know, very, very small amounts of gluten are probably not going to provoke somebody that's gluten intolerant. So, but, you know, often people get confused between gluten-free and wheat-free. They think, well, just because this product is wheat-free, that it's gluten-free, and that's not always the case. You have to read the label really carefully, because what happens is when a food manufacturer makes a wheat-free food, just like you mentioned, the thing that they're putting in is usually spelt, because spelt performs in a very similar way to wheat in terms of baking and processing. So, but keep in mind that spelt contains gluten. So you have to know, are you, number one, allergic to wheat? Or number two, are you sensitive or allergic to gluten? So there's that distinction. And then also keep in mind that a lot of these gluten-free products, they're loaded with sugar. And it's the same thing that we saw in the 1990s when all the fat was taken out of products. And what happened when we had the low-fat products? We had the high sugar, because you got to replace that nutrient with something else. So then we got all the sugar. So it's happening now with gluten-free foods. And when people go gluten-free, they're looking for the gluten-free bread, the gluten-free donuts, the gluten-free cookies. And it's kind of all the same stuff, and now it's just loaded up with sugar, so it's really not doing you any good outside of just taking out that gluten if you're unable to really read labels and know what you're getting.
Now, the substitute, actually, if you wanted to really get away from it entirely, you use corn or rice.
Correct. Or, you know, there's another grain, too, is sorghum.
Sorghum.
Sorghum, yeah. There's another sorghum products are making their way onto the market. And I think sorghum tastes really good. And Bob's Red Mill has a number of flours that use different beans. So garbanzo bean, pinto bean, different bean combinations. And those are actually very nice and hearty. And they don't have any kind of bean taste. And actually, they're higher in protein, which is better.
Yes, and he has a wonderful, wonderful line of organic food products, because I use them. And they are just really, really good. So I can recommend those highly. Now, let's talk about something that is so controversial right now, and that is the genetically modified organisms. And I find this such an interesting topic, because even in nature, nature will genetically modify things. But there's a difference when human beings seem to do it, and we have been finding that there may be some developed problems that we were not aware of, and it's because of our technology today that we're finding out about a lot of this. But let's address this.
Well, yes, and you mentioned that nature genetically modifies things, and actually I think, you know, what nature does is it naturally selects. So through natural selection, through hardiness of certain plants, you know, basically the fittest will survive in that way, and sometimes there's cross-pollination. But what genetically modified ingredients speak to is, here we have a scientist taking the genetic material, the DNA, of two unrelated species. So maybe we have tomato, a gene for tomato, that's put into the gene of, or the DNA of cotton, for example. And so we have two completely unrelated species now coming together in genetic form. And so that's not something that we're used to seeing in nature. That is definitely, you know, going in with more sophisticated techniques in order to do that work. And often genetically modified foods are created in that way because of resistance to pests or growing hardier crops and things like that. And what I would say is, basically, we don't know the long-term effects of eating these types of foods. We really don't. And the other, well, we're going to probably find out, because most of our crops in the United States are GMO or genetically modified, like soy. I think it's upwards of 90% are genetically modified. Corn. And if you go into any grocery store, like most people have seen in that documentary, Food Inc., what we know now is that most products in the grocery store are either soy or corn-based. And so you're getting a lot of GMOs when you go into the store. So I think, you know, we don't know the long-term effects in humans. And if we look at the effects in short-term studies in animals, what we see, and Jeff Smith has done a lot of this work in his book, Genetic Roulette. He talks about all the, and it's a very scientific book, so if you really want to understand the science, it's all there in his book. And he talks about reproductive toxicity. And again, this is, you know, higher amounts perhaps, and you really have to look at the intricacies of all the different studies to really make a head-to-head comparison. But I think the bottom line is we don't know. And so in order to avoid genetically modified foods, what you can do is buy organic food. And you'll know organic food in the produce section, because if you look at the little label, the little sticker on that piece of food, look for the number 9. So you'll have maybe a 5 or 6-digit number, and if it starts with a 9, that means it's organic. I believe if it starts with an 8, it means it's genetically modified. And if it doesn't have a 9, chances are it's genetically modified. So, you know, we're really faced with being bombarded with a whole host of different GMOs. But again, I think the bottom line is we just don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I know in Europe that they have not allowed genetically modified products because they really are very concerned about this. And many times the European environment, not all the time, but many times, they are, let's say, ahead of the United States in some of their research and their observations. Mm-hmm. One of the areas that they have been very concerned about is the bovine growth hormones and meat that has come from animals that have been fed excessive amount of hormones. And I have to share a story with you. I once knew a lady, her name was Rose, and she had a restaurant. And this lady was substantially older than me, and in fact she was in her 70s at the time I got to know her. And she said to me, knowing that chicken was one of my favorite meats, she said, "Do you enjoy the chicken neck?" And I said, "Oh yeah, that's when you broil it, you know, it's nice and crunchy, blah, blah, blah." And she said, "Whatever you do, don't eat the skin." And I said, "Well, what's wrong with the skin?" She said, "That's where they inject the hormones in the chickens." Now, that was at that time. I don't know what they do now. It may just be in the food, you know, in the feed. But she said, "Do not, because they inject the animals. I'm in the restaurant business. This is what I've learned. They inject the animals in the neck. So make sure before you eat the meat off the neck that you remove the skin, because the skin, the fat, holds it." Now, that's a few years back. And I think of that, and here's someone in the restaurant business making a comment like that to me. And so I didn't after that. It just was something I didn't realize. But it's in the fatty tissues of the body where a lot of things are held. Mm-hmm. And you know, women, especially, in the fatty tissues of the body will hold all kinds, those fat tissues hold all kinds of toxins and various things. It's a fascinating phenomena with fat cells. So tell us about the bovine growth hormone.
Well, the bovine growth hormone has been used commercially since about 1993, and it was used so that basically that cows can produce more milk. And what they were finding is that a lot of these cows were starting to get infections. They were getting mastitis, which is an infection of the mammary gland. And so, you know, I think it's very wise to really make sure that if you are eating any dairy products to avoid bovine growth hormone because of the potential effects in humans. And I haven't seen any scientific studies per se, but you can only imagine that, you know, oftentimes what happens is these cows that get infections are then given antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do you get the bovine growth hormone, you're getting the duo here now with antibiotics in your milk products. And
yes.
Then we have the whole issue of antibiotic resistance and, you know, then changing our gut flora. And if we change our gut flora, we can change our immunity, our digestion, and basically a whole host of different things.
And a fact that is very real, any mother, and we're of the animal kingdom, the humans are, any mother that is going to nurse a child knows, if she doesn't, she should know, that everything she takes into her body is going to pass through her milk to a child. So it's very, very real that whatever an animal is being fed is going to show up in the milk. Whatever it's being given, medication, it's going to show up in the milk.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known of nursing mothers that have been on medications and have been told by their doctors, don't nurse your baby during this time. You know, if we have to put you on medication, I'll store up some milk before, you know, we give it to you or whatever, because that they ingest or absorb is going to be passed along to the child. So
right.
These are things, it happens in the animal kingdom, period. It's just a reality. So all of this is, when you think, 93 wasn't that long ago, really, when you get down to the bare bones of facts. And so here we are consciously becoming alert to this, where we just didn't think along those lines. It just wasn't in the average consideration. It's like, oh, well, this won't hurt anything. But it
right.
does. It does. And
well,
it has
yeah.
long-term effects. And we're realizing a lot of this.
Well, and what about the stress on the cow? You know, we often hear about these things that are added to the cow, but what about what's produced endogenously or within the body of the cow as a result of getting these injections or having infections or responding to medications? You know, we're changing the stress phenotype of that cow, which is going to be producing higher levels of cortisol, which is a stress hormone. That's going to change insulin. That's going to change blood sugar. And there's a whole, you know, things in the body don't work in terms of one arrow to the next. It works in terms of a network of effects. And so it's a ripple effect. And so we're changing essentially the whole physiology of a cow, for example, when we do something like this. And then we take that in and take in those stress signals into our body, and our body takes that in as a message of potentially inflammation or stress. And there was even a very interesting article in Medical Hypothesis in 2006 by Yun and Do, and they were talking about how maybe these stress phenotypes actually that are produced in an animal translate into the body in terms of an alarm signal. And maybe this is connected somehow to obesity or to chronic diseases. So maybe in conjunction with all the food additives, it's also the emotional state, the psychological state of the animal before it's killed or even during its life. So we have to think about that too, and I think that really gets under the radar. We're not always really focused on that, but I think it's really important, and we probably underestimate those effects.
Now, you also have information in your book regarding artificial sweeteners. And in today's world, that is, my goodness, how long has this gone back? I think that, when was the first artificial sweetener
Saccharin.
Introduced?
Saccharin. Oh, goodness.
When was
I think
that
it,
introduced?
Wasn't it 1950s?
I don't know, but it was quite a while back, and since then, there's been a consistent progression with it. And now we have products like Splenda, and we have Equal, and we have Saccharin, because a lot of the products that were introduced so many years ago are still around.
Right.
And so here you are, and people want to keep their sugar intake low. Diabetics are very interested in products like this because some foods you want to have sweetened, and, gee, this is a great thing to do. But you go into quite a bit of detail on this, and one of the products that you bring out, which is not an artificial sweetener, is stevia. And I was surprised, because it's something that I have been using because I really enjoy it, that there are studies that say it actually, and this is from a plant, it naturally protects DNA and improves immune system functioning. And in 2006, the World Health Organization concluded it wasn't toxic to genes. And it's been used extensively for more than 30 years in Japan and South America. You bring so much information forth in your book. What's your positioning on the artificial sweeteners?
Well, my position on anything artificial is really to revert back to the natural forms rather than to go to something that's synthesized and chemical in nature. So in what I see with a lot of people that use artificial sweeteners is a number of things. First of all, I see a lot of changes in the nervous system, a lot of changes in neurological health, whether migraines, hallucinations, problems concentrating, tremors. So it's really unpredictable as to long-term, if you're using these types of sweeteners, what types of effects they'll have on you cumulatively. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned before, that we store a lot of things in our fat tissue. And if these things are not natural, sometimes the body doesn't know what to do with them. And so they kind of stick around longer, and they may have more deleterious effects. So, and also I noticed, secondly, that people that consume a lot of artificial sweeteners, their palate becomes so high in terms of a benchmark for sweetness. It's almost like they have a real hard time coming down to eating whole foods that are just moderately or weakly sweet because they're not as intense. And our body becomes very used to certain flavors and tastes and sensations, and so we start to crave it if we don't have it after a while. I mean, we see that with caffeine. We see that with alcohol. And with artificial sweeteners, it gives us an inflated sense of sweetness. And so then we're going to always try to match that. And so it's going to really keep us hooked into sugar cravings. That's what I've seen time and time again. And once people go off of them, they start feeling better. They don't have the headaches. And they can actually start eating fruits and more natural foods. You know, I get really worried when I see those huge, big baking totes of Splenda, because these artificial sweeteners weren't supposed to be used, in my mind, in my reading, in large quantities. I mean, these are so intensely sweet that you're just supposed to use, the intent was just to use a little bit. So now we've got Splenda in these huge baking totes that people are scooping up and putting into their baked goods. And Splenda, as we know, is a chlorinated disaccharide, which means it looks like sugar, but it's got three chlorine atoms attached. So, you know, I've worked with another nutritionist. Her name is Barb Schultz, and she often would say to patients, and I think this is very clever, that would you rather swim in your swimming pool or drink it? Because essentially, you're drinking your swimming pool because of the chlorine in Splenda, when you have Splenda. So my advice is really to veer away from all things that are artificial as much as possible, especially artificial sweeteners.
Well, this little book, The A to Z Guide to Food Additives, my guest, Deanna Minnick. Deanna, do you have a website people can go to?
I do. It's www.foodandspirit.com. So the and is spelled out, foodandspirit.com. And if you go on the website, you can sign up for free newsletters. I've got a class that's now happening in Gig Harbor, Washington, called Nutrition for the Soul, and that'll be starting actually a week from today. It's an 8-week class. It's at Harbor Wellbeing, and so if you're interested, you can go to the website, you can email me and sign up. And so it's really exciting to give this information out to people, and I really want to help them, to guide them, and to help them maneuver their way amidst the very complicated food supply.
I agree, and I think your book is so well done. And also, for those of you that are interested in this, there are consumer resources that she has in her book, as well as specific information and bibliographies, information regarding allergies, sensitivities, and other special issues. Deanna Minnick, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you, Donna. It's been my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't forget, go to foodandspirit.com, find out more. But if you're really interested,
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, so give me a call if you'd like to chat. Telephone number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, if when you were listening to the show, we all of a sudden disappeared and you go, what happened to Donna? Well, there was some kind of a glitch within the telephone line, and I don't know, we get gremlins every once in a while that decide they're going to do their own special tango, but we're back on and everything's fine. I know we've got a caller, but before I go to that caller, I want to mention to those of you who are in Washington, a very special event is coming up in September, September 26th, in fact, which is a Saturday. If you're in the state of Washington, the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Club is putting on their Fall Expo. It's being held at the Kent Commons at 525 4th Avenue North in Kent. And their zip code, if you want to look up the directions on MapQuest, is 98042. Now, the event is going to be from 9 in the morning until 5 in the evening. It's free. Come on in. And if you want to get more information on this wonderful event, I've been a part of this event for a long time, and it's just a joy to be able to do it, then go to their website, B like boy, E like Edward, P like Paul, C like Charles, bepcweb.org, and you'll get all of the details and information about the exhibitors, etc. And I'm going to be an exhibitor as well as a speaker, so we'll have a chance to meet on a couple of different levels there, and if you can, come on by, say hello. I will be doing many consultations. Plus, I'm going to have Buku books there. So you're going to have an opportunity to have access to a tremendous array of publications that maybe otherwise you wouldn't even know about. So again, that's the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Club Expo, Saturday, September 26th. put it down in your calendar if you're in the state of Washington, because it is a fabulous event. So many wonderful people participating in this. It's just a delight to be associated with them. Let's go to our first caller of the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Pat in Connecticut.
Okay, Pat, you have to remind me where you are in Connecticut.
I'm in Hamden.
Hamden. All right. Now, Pat, the first thing I'm looking at with you is you're going to be very disgusted with a particular conversation, interaction with someone. You are automatically, your hackle is going to go up over something that will be expressed by this individual. And you're going to see some other people, it looks like it's a group of some kind, other people going, oh, yeah. And you're just going to go, ooh, this just really irks me. Well, bite your tongue until you can think how you would like to respond to this. The person is expressing their opinion in the way that they are because they've never known any other way to think. So your response, naturally, is coming from, your responsive reaction is coming from an awareness of a whole different level of experience. So allow your frustration to sort of settle down and just sort of put yourself in a detached mode and say, how can I get a point across to this person? Because this individual honestly has never gone outside of their paradigm. They are parroting other people's opinions that they have adopted as their own. They honestly have not thought about certain experiences at all. It just isn't in their patterning. So when you bring forth information, what you might want to do is bring it forth in a way and say, just very quietly, let everybody make their comments and just say, I'd like to just give you a different perspective. I respect your opinion, but, you know, it's been my observation that XYZ, blah, blah, blah. And I think you're going to find some other people just going, wow, I didn't know about that. And you say, mm-hmm. It's like someone finding out that a banana could be cooked 5,000 different ways. And they thought all you ever did was eat the banana out of the skin. So, and I'm using that. That's a ridiculous example, I know, but I think you get the idea. It's important to understand that part of what you are learning is how to communicate more effectively with people and not to have what I call the knee-jerk verbal response. Thinking before you speak is going to really empower you on multiple levels. So this is something that is going to have a tremendous difference in your life, and especially as you move forward in a certain area of professional expertise, it is really going to assist you. Do you have a question for me today?
Can I ask, is this about a woman that I've had a problem with very recently?
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I think that this is something that is specifically being directed to you for a larger picture.
What do you mean?
When I say a larger picture, you may have encountered a particular individual that you had a reaction to, but this is something that might come up with someone else as well.
Wow.
So it is learning how to communicate differently.
How to communicate what?
Differently.
Differently.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Is this like,
remember,
really
like it's a learning journey.
Is it like an attack on me?
No. No.
Okay.
Don't take it out of context.
Okay. Okay, that's helpful. Donna, you told me that I was going to come across different ways to help myself with my anxiety. And I found a woman, it's an ND, I think that's called a naturopath.
Yes.
And she's doing some saliva and urine testing, and I'm wondering if this is what's going to help me. I really feel like I'm kind of at the end of all this. I just don't have much more in me to deal with it. The anxiety has been going on for 2 years now.
Well, I would like for you to research, because you didn't have it, excepting it's really fairly recent that this has been going on, and it's been going on for 2 years. So I'd like for you to research EFT, and that's Emotional Thought Therapy. And you can look it up on the web.
I've done
and
that.
I'd like for you to research that.
I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't give up on it, dear.
Okay.
Sometimes you have to repeat things. But if the naturopath is able to assist you, I really think that, you know, doing it from a point of keeping yourself well, I think is very good. But remember that there is this part of your learning experience that this is part of a journey with you. So whatever is at the base of the trigger for this, that's what you want to get to. You just don't want to deal with the symptoms. You want to get to the cause.
Right.
And that is how you need to look at it.
Huh. And you can do that with EFT?
I think many times you can.
Okay.
But you have to have someone that knows what they're doing.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for your call, hon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. If you'd like to call in like Pat, give me a call at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So many times we'll go through ups and downs in life, and maybe we have challenges that smack us in our mental face, and we go, oh, what am I going to do with this? Well, if you're like any one of us, you'll get so frustrated that you find yourself going in circles, like a hamster running around its exercise wheel. You're just going the same place, same thing, over and over and over again. Well, I came across some very good suggestions about idea producing and something that we don't often allow ourselves to do, and that is daydream. Were you ever told when you were a kid that daydreaming was a waste of time, it was the activity of fools, or they'd come up with some kind of a statement? You know, when you're a kid growing up, having time to use your imagination and to just daydream and to visualize is just absolutely as natural as anything could be when you're young. Well, we should remember that when we are growing up and maturing. Do you know what? They have discovered in research that when you're daydreaming, let's say you have a problem, you put it in the front of your mind and maybe make a mental picture of it, and then you're daydreaming and you just allow your mind to just go flip-flopping through whatever files it chooses to go through, or maybe you're just watching clouds, and you may find when you suddenly look at a bluebird in a tree and watching the bluebird, and all of a sudden an idea will pop into your head. Now, Steve Allen, who was a very well-known entertainer, was considered a genius because he would do that. And he would write, he had pads of paper all over his house so he could write down his ideas when they came to him. Many scientists, like Thomas Edison and others, incorporated the same thing, because they believed that there was that activity that went on a higher level in the mind that they could have access to if they just relaxed. So daydreaming produces that. Also, another tip is that you can walk backwards. This one I thought was really great. If you've been told to sort of step back from a problem when you're encountering it, guess what? The advice is sound advice. Volunteers were asked to walk forward, backward, or sideways while trying to solve a problem, and guess what they found out? The people that walked backwards came up with faster, more effective solutions, and they think it's because of the way the brain is wired. Why? Because walking backwards isn't normal. It takes a different type of thinking, and it's unfamiliar to us, so it makes the brain work on what they described as a high alert, and they said it stimulates the mental region linked to cognitive thinking and problem solving. Donna Siebel here. We're going to take a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I'll help you solve a problem, perhaps. Give me a buzz. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, Learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into. Now, we've got a wonderful lineup of guests coming up. Starting on Monday, we're going to be talking about the secret life of genius. John Chambers is going to be my guest. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be cooking. That's right. We're going to be cooking with all things Trader Joe's. Deanna Gunn's going to be my guest. History, does it interest you? Well, Giorgio Tsoukalos is going to be my guest. He is going to be standing in for Eric von Daniken, who is world-renowned for his challenges to historical and archaeological information. The book History is Wrong is a fascinating one. And then on Thursday and Friday of next week, I'm going to be on the road traveling, so we are going to be playing The Best of Donna, and you will be hearing a repeat of favorite shows that we have had just this past month. So it is going to be a dynamic week. We're going to have music, and we're going to have Ripley's Believe It or Not. We're just going to have all kinds of good things. So just know that programming is going to be good. But on Thursday and Friday of next week, you will not be able to reach me, but you will have good programming on the air regardless. Yes, I do have to travel, and it looks like my traveling schedule is going to be getting busier. So we'll just take the show wherever we go, but sometimes we just have to make a break every once in a while. Back to school. Oh, my goodness, can you believe it? It's just around the corner, and those school classrooms are going to be humming. Well, if you're like most parents, you're going to find yourself a little bit stressed out because, you know, you've got to get those supplies for school ready, and the kids have to go through a big adjustment, right? Right. So does the family, because no longer late nights. If your kids have been able to stay up real late, now they're going to have to go to bed at earlier hours. And, of course, we're not going to be finding daylight savings time disappearing until about October. So the longer daylight hours sometimes makes it harder to get those kids into bed. It's always a big adjustment when they go back into school. But if you start working on it now, you may find that it's not quite so stressful. And here are some wonderful suggestions that were passed along. If you want to get the kids in the mood for school, for the studying process they're going to have to pick up after having the summer off, there's an online schoolwork organizer at soshiku.com, and I'll spell that for you. And it's free. It's soshiku.com. Now, what it does, if your kids like to work with a computer, it helps them to keep their assignments online, and it'll even send the kids the texts and email alerts when the due dates for the assignments are coming up. And they can get online tutoring 24 hours a day on any subject at tutor.com. I mean, technology is amazing. Tutor.com, and apparently it's $1 for the first 20 minutes, so that's something you might want to pass along to them. And I know so many kids, I've got friends that have kids in school, and they all have computers. And sometimes families have to share a computer, but it is part of the household furniture, you might say. Well, if you put a cactus by the computer, it boosts the oxygen and filters indoor air pollution improving the overall energy of the people in the room. And this is something that I've spoken about before, and it really is, it is valuable, because what it does, it counteracts the harmful electromagnetic fields that are emitted from computer screens. Have you ever felt sluggish when you're working on a screen? Well, working with anything on a screen for a long time, it causes you, if you have cactus in the room and by the computer, you'll find you stay more alert, and Japanese studies have shown that it actually boosts brain activity. And they say the reason they think the plants are so beneficial is because they thrive in typically very harsh environments, and they have adapted to filter out anything that is not, you know, positive around for them, anything that might be a danger. That's why they've got all those little prickly things on them called spines. Also, another thing, you might find that having magnesium in your diet is going to be very, very valuable. There's been some research that has promoted the fact that if people work for long hours on computers, they deplete their magnesium supply physically. Energy, it is amazing, and it's just something you need to check out. Also, if you've got that early morning, oh, I don't want to get out of bed stuff, you might want to do something that has music to it for getting the kids up out of bed. Maybe the special, what do I want to say, trumpet call that they would use, revelry or whatever it is that they use in the military. And I'm just being a little sassy there. And just remember that it's got to get them up out of bed. I'll tell you something that can be very helpful, too. And it's really worked well with adults, and especially if you have a hard time getting up when the mornings are getting darker. And that is an alarm clock that actually will illuminate the room gradually. It will wake you up. Why is it it's so easy to wake up on a sunshiny morning? That's because you've got all that bright sunshine coming in, and the body automatically responds to it. So you can do the same with an alarm. Check them out and see what you can find, because that really may want to do it. And if your kids have a typical jet lag approach about getting on the bus at 7 a.m., what you want to do is adjust their clocks forward or backward in 5-minute increments so they won't even notice. And that little bit of extra time can make a difference. And also, if you want to save on school supplies and clothes, buy for just 1 week. If you wait until after school, you will save a lot of money. A lot of things go on sale. And many times, kids, when they start school, they may have an idea of what they want, but maybe their teachers will tell them they need different types of supplies, so it's going to save you money on more than one level. So let them find out what's really going on so that you can be aware of what is needed. And most stores do mark everything down once school starts. So you'll get everything for maybe as much as half off, and you won't have the crowds that you have to deal with. Check out secondhand specialists if you need to buy sports equipment or musical instruments for your kids. Play It Again Sports or musiciansfriend.com are two websites that you can go to. Play It Again Sports or musiciansfriend.com. It'll save you money, and it's a great way to be able to pass along instruments. And you might want to check to see at your local thrift store if they know of a place where you can buy instruments. And I've known people that have gone to pawn shops and have got instruments for their kids that way. Well, I know we're just about out of time. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You've got a fabulous weekend ahead of you. It is still summer, but here in the Pacific Northwest, autumn already has introduced herself. She says, I'm here because the trees are turning color. So wherever you are, enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy those warm temperatures, because all too soon we're going to be shifting into the cooler cycle that the wonderful season of autumn always brings. We'll see you back here, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.